Now we're getting up there to the to where the physicality can become a problem.
This is Mark Juliana performing live in our studio with some support provided by some of his friendly robots, beat-making gadgets. Welcome to The Checkout. It's also a podcast that you should subscribe to if you haven't already on iTunes and Stitcher and some other places. Always on WBGO.org and check out jazz.org. I'm Simon Rentner. Mark Juliana is one of 600 artists plus taking the stage at this year's Winter Jazz Festival, taking over downtown Manhattan January 10th through the 17th. The percussionist who's provided the beat for so many, Brad Meldow, David Bowie, and so many other influential artists, brought in his stripped-down drum kit with some of his cool electronic plugins to take us on his personal journey to becoming the artist he is today. From playing like Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers in high school, to then emulating the amazing Elvin Jones and Art Blakey, to now adopting modern experimental music by way of Square Pusher and his former boss, David Bowie himself. You won't want to miss our illuminating conversation and performance with Mark Juliana. Thanks for checking in. He's a joysy boy.
Mark Juliana is holding down the rhythm here in Newark, New Jersey. Home of The Checkout from WBGO. Jersey is the name of his latest recording on Motema, actually an acoustic jazz quartet he's bringing to the Winter Jazz Fest in New York City. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Big pleasure to be here. Thank you.
What's next?
For the last 10 or 12 years, all of my, you know, music that I've released as a leader was in a more electronic realm. And then I got the itch to make a bit of an acoustic statement. And that was a couple years ago with the record called Family First. And if you asked me then, I think I would have told you that most likely a beat music or a more electronic record would have followed, because both of those musical worlds are of equal, you know, value and inspiration to me. But, you know, we were having so much fun with the jazz quartet, and we were building all this momentum on the road, playing lots of shows, that it just felt right to make another record with the band and, you know, just keep riding it out.
Well, let's just get right to it. The first track, Inter R, from your recent acoustic jazz record, Mark Juliana Jazz Quartet.
Thank you.
That's Mark Juliana Jazz Quartet, Jason Rigby, Fabian Almazan, Chris Morrissey, Mark Juliana, the leader, on drums. He's performing at the Winter Jazz Fest in New York City and joining all kinds of some of the most cutting-edge, shall we say, jazz artists on the scene today. I thought we would participate in a little exercise of we set the drum kit up here in Newark to give us a tour of the evolution of Mark Juliana coming to the drums kind of late. So take us to your first moment where you're like, this is what I'm doing. And what were you playing?
I started playing drums when I was 15. And it started, the first time I played drums was in my first drum lesson. So it just seemed like I had no expectations going in. It was just another thing to keep me busy. My parents always wanted me to be busy. I was very fortunate to have an incredible teacher, Joe Bergamini, who was, you know, lived in the town next to me, so another Jersey guy. I was essentially, and still am, a product of the music around me on the radio and MTV and stuff. So in 1995, that was Soundgarden and Nirvana and Red Hot Chili Peppers and all that stuff. So those were the first heroes that I would point to and say it would be cool to do that.
And so you were playing those licks. Like, can you give us an example of a...
I was playing really poor versions of those beats, but, you know, sometimes, this is a side note, I wish I could still play the way I played when I was 15, but I actually can't anymore.
What?
I can't because I'm a different person now, and there was a youthful ignorance and actually lack of technique that oftentimes led to really interesting musical results. But now I practiced a lot, and I went to jazz school, and I had all these life experiences that, by definition, I can't play exactly the same way, and there are days where I wish I had access to that. Anyway, let's see. So that was Blood Sugar Sex Magik from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That was one of the first beats that I heard where you could identify the song just from the beat, you know? That's how the song starts, and immediately, you know, I'm in high school again, and, you know, yeah, really fun.
All right, so then jumping ahead now, I'm assuming maybe the next musical moment that you had was when you went to jazz school.
Exactly. So, you know, with Joe, such an important part of the drum set is that it's a fundamental element of so many different styles of music. When he introduced me to jazz, it really kind of turned me upside down. And that was hearing guys like Tony Williams and Elvin Jones and Roy Haynes, Art Blakey, Jack DeJohnette, you know, very long list that you guys very beautifully keep the spirit alive of them, you know, with your programming, which I'm very thankful for. But, yeah, when I heard those guys, Tony and Elvin in particular, with, you know, Coltrane's band and Miles's second quintet, that was a huge, huge turning point for me. And it's still, those guys are really at the top of my list and my heroes.
I understand that you actually accidentally played like Elvin and unconsciously.
Again, I would say a bad version, but yes, I think... Yeah, I've had different moments throughout my musical life where I was so excited by an influence where those things would start to come out unknowingly, and I had to kind of start to censor myself and try to make sure everything I was playing was at least intentional. You know, I feel like it's still okay to play something that pays tribute to these guys as long as it's intentional.
Can you give us your bad Elvin Jones impression?
Oh, absolutely. As long as it's a bad one, of course I can. For me, it's much more about the spirit than the details of what he's playing. And that's the ultimate pursuit of try to, you know, express at a level like he or many of those guys had done.
Can you do Blakey?
It's just... Put me on the spot. But, you know, on these drums, that's my best representation, yeah.
A stripped-down version of Mark Juliana's drum kit sponsored by Gretsch?
Gretsch drums, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Actually, the drums I have here, this is a unusually small bass drum. It's a 16-inch bass drum, and the reason I got it, and also in this color, is because I saw a picture of Elvin playing a 16-inch bass drum with this finish, and that's the only reason I got this drum. And now I love it, of course. It's become a really important sound to me, but it's definitely an Elvin tribute.
Excellent. So what do you then consider to be your first artistic statement as an artist? And make the distinction between a musician and an artist. Show us the beat that you consider to be the genesis of you as an artist.
Oh, wow. There's a beat that I love that actually draws a nice line from the early Nirvana influence through to the Jim Blackmore avant-garde influence. And it's a beat from this song called "Scentless Apprentice" on "In Utero" by Nirvana, and it sounds something like this. You know, today's version sounds like this. So it's a really powerful groove, and I heard Jim Black playing something very similar, but in a much more improvised and kind of glitched out way. And this kind of groove also lends itself to some programmed music. And that's where another big influence came from, or still comes from. Guys like Aphex Twin and Square Pusher and Luke Vibert, you know, a lot of the music coming out of Europe in the mid-90s, you know, a bit of drum and bass and things like that, acid. Those beats, when I first heard Aphex Twin and Square Pusher, it kind of created the same feeling in my body as I had when I heard Elvin and Tony. You know, it was like a completely, I knew I was going to go in a different direction after hearing them. And yeah, that beat, I mean, I could even try to program that on
this
drum machine just to hear what it may sound like. And
so essentially, that beat you just played for us, that's when you're like, I'm an artist now? Or it's a combining of everything?
Oh, it's that's exactly the point. I think it was, when I was younger, if I was playing a jazz gig, I thought I was only allowed to play my jazz ideas, whatever that means. And if I was on a rock gig, I thought I was only allowed to play my rock ideas, and so on and so forth. So it wasn't really until I developed the courage to allow all of my influences to coexist in a natural way. And that's when I think the best music started happening. But the most important thing being that the ultimate goal is to be serving the music at all times and only make decisions that are the best decision for that music in that moment. You know, to be calling on all of these different influences, and have them at the ready for whatever the situation might need.
Well, let's hear it.
We'll be right back.
Mark Giuliana joins us on the checkout from Newark, New Jersey at WBGO, the home of Mark Giuliana, born and raised in Jersey. I love doing that. It's the perfect tie-in. And I just have to say, Mark Giuliana, that if anyone out there, and I'm calling out anyone that's listening to this right now, gets the chance to also see your, of course, acoustic quartet, but if you get a chance to see your beat music project, and I mean extended beat music project where you have like 8 guys on stage,
right,
or something,
right,
at Rockwood Music Hall or wherever, just go. Because like you said earlier, I really haven't seen an act quite like yours that can sort of jump from style to style, genre to genre, but it doesn't sound like you're jumping from style to style and genre to genre. It just all kind of seamlessly flows together in a brilliant mix.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind. I think the best results have come from not thinking about it too much, you know? So I think it's, you know, I'm a product of my surroundings. And like I said, that was a lot of modern music and a lot of electronic music made its way in an organic way. So again, I just try to be that kind of full representation at all times and allow those things to enter the picture.
Now, we should also note that you were one of the core band members of David Bowie's last recording, Black Star. And I was wondering, since we have your kit set up right here, I want to know what David Bowie asked you to do on drums, and if you could show us.
Sure, that's a good question. You know, all the songs had demos, and they actually... So David was playing everything on the demos, and most of the drum parts were either a loop or, you know, something programmed. Particularly in the things that he programmed, it's really exciting because he's not necessarily concerned with what's possible or not on the drums, you know? A non-drummer doesn't think about,
what's humanly possible.
Exactly. And that's what I love a lot about, really, about electronic music, actually. It's oftentimes things are programmed that are impossible to execute in real time.
Square pusher,
yep. And
Aphex Twin.
And then when I would try to emulate those things, because they're by definition impossible, you know, where I would land or where I would end up would be a bit of a new ground, you know, for me. So there's a song on the record called Girl Loves Me that I really... I love that song, and I love the take that we got, you know. And that was another thing about the record. It was, they were takes. Tim LaFave, who was playing bass, he and I, oftentimes, you know, we would start the day, and David liked really early takes, first, second takes. So there were some days where we played something, and we said, oh, is that it? You know, because in order to start, where Jason Linder can start doing all his overdubs, or Donnie starts doing the overdubs, we need to know what we're building upon. So there were some days where it might be a first take, and Tim and I are on the couch by noon and just hanging out, you know? So that, and really, that was as special of an experience as the playing, because some of my fondest memories just come from, you know, the hang, too, which is really special. But so that song, Girl Loves Me, on the demo, it had 2 loops on top of each other, 2 fairly busy things just planted on top of each other. So completely impossible to pull off. And I thought, okay, I'll try to lay down a fairly foundational groove first, and then maybe we'll talk about it and I could go back and add stuff to it. But it ended up just being that first groove. So the general spirit of it is this. Let's see.
So now, for the last rhythmic demonstration that I'll ask you to do, put you on the spot to do, and this has been a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Is I wanted you to show us when you were trying to transition to actually be a robot, to extending yourself to your organic maximum.
Right.
What's the, like, hardest thing that you basically tried to execute and failed at?
Well, many things. Let's see. Maybe I'll try to program a beat in the spirit of, you know, the drum and bass world, and then we can listen to it coming out of the machine, and then I'll try to convey that. So we'll see. All right. I could slowly add more elements just to make it busier. Okay, so this is a decent representation of, you know, what someone might think of as drum and bass. I mean, the first thing to do, and the first thing that I heard guys like Squarepusher doing was it was just a lot faster, you know, so we could do that easily. So now we're getting up there to where the physicality can become a problem. But let's see. So I dropped a stick, so I tried to get the hi-hat going from the drum machine. But,
Well, you demonstrated exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
You couldn't hold on to the stick.
Yeah. So basically, there's a certain ignorance and relentless character that the drum machine provides that I think can be really captivating and can absolutely be musical. You know, I know there's some people who... don't love drum machines and things like that. But to me, it's just another instrument. And it relies on, you know, the artists to send their personality through it. I hope you let people know that we didn't plan any of this. So I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants. But I'm glad we're doing it because it is all, you know, we're hitting meaningful spots for me that have certainly informed who I am as a musician.
The singularity demonstrated by Mark Giuliana, I think we're all half robot and half human now. Thank you so much for joining us on the Checkout.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Flaw and Order, Mark Juliana's beat music, the Los Angeles improvisations. We thank the drummer, composer, and so much more for joining us today and lugging in his kit and cumbersome gadgets to our studio. And don't forget to check out Mark Juliana's jazz quartet. He also has a great recording out as well called Jersey on Motema. The Mark Juliana Jazz Quartet performing at this year's Winter Jazz Festival, night two of the marathon. His performance taking place at Le Poisson Rouge in Greenwich Village. He joins Antonio Sanchez's Migration and Theo Croker's Big Brother Big Band. And if you haven't already, make sure to follow us on all of our social media, our Facebook page, The Checkout from WBGO, and on Twitter, at Checkout Jazz. I'm at Simon Rettner. The Checkout radio show and podcast is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.